Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me today is Bishop Ben.
Greetings and blessings to all.
And Reverend Father Matthew Schnabel.
Hello.
I'm so used to saying Reverend Mark at that point.
Right.
So we just kind of made it into part of your title tonight.
That is fun.
So, tonight we're going to talk about Open Table, the Radical Welcome of Communion. Communion, also known as the Eucharist or the Lord's Supper, has long stood as a central sacrament within Christian worship. Yet the question of who is welcome to the table has for centuries divided churches and communities. In this episode, we're going to look at the concept of Open Table, the radical, transformative welcome inherent in communion, and how it both challenges and fulfills the heart of the Christian gospel. So we want to invite our listeners tonight to reimagine the ritual of breaking bread and sharing the cup, not as a boundary, but as a bridge. Together we delve into the history, theology, and weaving together the voices of scholars, pastors, and people who have been witnessed or experienced the power of Open Table. So one of the things I want to ask our panel and our audience, what does it mean to truly offer an open table? Bishop Ben, what do you think?
Well, in my experience and opinion, it should be everybody welcome, nobody excluded, everybody, and I mean everybody. There's no difference what religion you're from, what race you're from, what orientation you are, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody's welcome. That's my idea of open table.
Father Matt?
So my idea of and how I practice open table is that it's open to everybody that is worshiping at that present moment, with no exceptions. So wherever, regardless of where you're at in your spiritual journey, you're welcome to come and receive at God's table.
Excellent. And how does this practice confront our human tendency towards exclusion? I think that, you know, we do have a tendency as human beings to want to exclude certain people, you know, the Karen across the street or, you know, the person that might not look, act, talk, or, you know, behave like we think they should, from those things that we think are very sacred and very holy. But by throwing the doors open to everyone, in my opinion, it helps us to overcome that exclusionary behavior. It helps us to open ourselves to new experiences and to connecting with people that we may not otherwise normally connect with. What do you think, Father Matt?
I think that notion is right on point, because typically our reaction, especially when it's around something like communion, anything we hold sacred, we want to kind of hoard it to ourselves and put limits on who can touch it, who can be exposed to it, who's around it. And an open table turns that and causes us to have a juxtaposition and say, well, why do we need to safeguard the things that are sacred when God says that there's no need to safeguard it?
Right. I agree.
When we read the Last Supper account on Maundy Thursday, no one was excluded from the table. Even Judas was fed before he was dismissed to the garden to are dismissed to go get the people to confront Jesus at the garden. So it's if Judas is acceptable to have communion, then who isn't?
Right. You know? Right. And that segues us into that, you know, the origins of communion in the upper, you know, in the upper room before Jesus died, when he was gathered with his disciples on the eve of his crucifixion. You know, we see that he welcomed everyone. Like Father Matt said, you know, even Judas, who he knew would betray him, even Peter, who he knew would deny him, you know, and all the other disciples who would run away in fear were all welcome there at the table. And that was a very radically inclusive notion, you know, because human nature is, especially if you are somebody who would deny or doubt or even betray him, a person, then our human nature says, I'm not going to welcome them to a meal with me, you know. And yet Jesus did, saying, this is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And so, do you think, I mean, how do you see, Bishop Ben, the early church's continuation of that practice, at least for the first 100 years or so of the church? I mean, do you think that they were continuing that practice, or did they start allowing exclusion to occur?
Well, and that's a very good question. And in the Roman church, you can see how they deviated from Jesus' open table policy to starting to restrict communion to only the ones that were appropriate to receive communion, like the ones that received first communion. I know that first communion was early on, later on in practice thing, but you saw the nuances of them starting to put practices in of not including people in certain things like communion or certain rituals, certain rites. But you see that continuing on today too. That
right.
You can't go to our modern mass and not take communion if you haven't gone to confession or received first communion or all the other things that go along with the church, you know, like your first confirmation, all et cetera, et cetera. You know, the priest restricts you from attending. Even a Protestant can't go and receive a communion from them. So they still continue that practice today.
Right, exactly. And Father Matt, we see that very poignantly in the First Council of Jerusalem. I mean, Jesus isn't even dead 30 years yet and resurrected 30 years yet. And we have Peter and Paul fighting over, you know, who is worthy and what, you know, constitutes allowing them to participate.
Yeah, and that council would have looked shockingly different had it gone the other way for the church, because it would have meant only circumcised Christians could receive the Eucharist.
Right.
Versus Paul's argument was, well, no, everybody should receive the Eucharist. And Peter and Paul were squabbling back and forth. No, he needed to be circumcised, go through Jewish conversion, and then become a Christian, like the apostles did. And that wasn't going to work for everybody, you know, especially in the Gentile world, where in order to advance in society, you had to be a Gentile. And so for that to ask people to sacrifice their standing in society to be able to take communion, that's kind of where we start seeing this butting of heads. And then even later on, it becomes further and further excluded, to where the people are only receiving communion maybe two or three times a month until the Council of Trent. And the priests are the ones solely getting communion every single time a Mass is said. So you kind of have this whole snowballing effect of further and further exclusion, and then having to backtrack that and say, wait a minute, we need to open this back up to the people so that the people can be full participants in the life of the church.
And Nancy asked a good question, and what about women? Even in the upper room for the Last Supper, it is believed that women were present and participated, especially Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of Cephas, and Jesus' own mother was likely there.
And early texts like the Didache, which were really the first versions of the missals that were written by the apostles to be handed down to the next generation of clergy within the church. It says clear as day in the Greek that women are everybody in the household is to participate in the agape meal, which was the early Eucharist, because it was a secret gathering. So they would be in each other. There were no churches or cathedrals, so it would be in the in somebody's home, typically a widow who had inherited property from her husband, that would open up her home to the followers. So if we were going to exclude women, we would be excluding the host of the person that was sponsoring the Eucharistic meal that day. So there was this early notion that we don't need to limit who receives the Eucharist. And then somehow we lost that sense and became more exclusive, and then realized we had been wronged and backtracked on that exclusion. So,
absolutely. Which brings us, of course, to the next segment, which is the closed table and history of exclusion. You know, despite Christ's example, the history of communion has often been marked by barriers and restrictions. You know, that we had the development of the requirements of baptism, confirmation, and confession, faith, as well as going to confession for your sins, that began to become part of the process, which is still done in the Roman Catholic Church. You know, you have to have been baptized. You have to go to confession before you can receive the Eucharist. You also can't be someone who doesn't agree to their doctrinal stance. The whole point then of RCIA, the rite of Christian initiation for adults, is basically the behind the scenes course on who can and can't be welcome at the table. You know what I mean? And then of course the conflict between denominations occurred. You know, years ago in the Lutheran Church, shortly after its founding, they had so much trouble with people that they felt were not worthy to receive communion. They issued little coins with the church name on it, and you had to bring that coin in on Sunday, and you had to put it on the altar before the priest would give you communion, to show that you were a part of the church, that you were...
Oh, because the Zwingli Luther debate.
Right.
On the Eucharist.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, that ended up being a thing. As well as, you know, in more modern history, in the, you know, 1700s, 1800s, and 1900s, the exclusion of black people from communion. That's why the AME and the CME churches exist today. The Anglican Methodist Episcopal and the Catholic Methodist Episcopal churches exist because they were not welcome at the white churches to receive communion and participate fully in the life of the church. Bishop Ben, I'm sure you have plenty of stories from your background, being Latino, of, you know, people having been excluded for various reasons as well.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was growing up and I was becoming a young altar server, I remember the priest told us during our training sessions that if we were not, if the community, the, see, I guess I kind of got lucky. I guess I was in a mixed parish. But on the same token, the priest was kind of, if they're not white, don't give them communion. And I'm like, I never understood why he said that until he started explaining why. And I'm like, well, what's the difference? We don't have, we all bleed the same.
Right.
But then again, as I got older, I discovered that one of the local Episcopalian churches in my back hometown of El Paso was white only. And they only did, I mean, you couldn't even go in the front door if you weren't white. And it's like, wow. And this was talking, I'm talking late 80s, early 90s. And this was supposed to be an end of that, but it still kept on going. Even when I got ordained as a priest, I remember one of the deacons in the parish I was assigned told me, oh, well, you can't serve communion to alcoholics, to the drunks. We had a big community of homeless and alcoholic people. And they, you know, come to Mass, you know, sometimes drunk. I had never turned them down. The deacon always tell me, you're supposed to turn them down. Well, I don't see it that way. Jesus didn't turn anybody away. So, of course, you know, on that token, I used to get in quite a bit of a trouble with the bishop, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I would rather be in trouble with a bishop than with God. I mean,
right. Exactly. And that was my comment. It was, well, I have to answer to God when I die, not the bishop.
That's right.
So.
And Father Matt, how have you seen people excluded from the Eucharist?
Well, I grew up in the independent fundamentalist Baptist church. So when we did have communion, which was twice a year, the communion was limited to those who were registered members of the church. So essentially, who was giving money to the offering plate? Mm-hmm. So that didn't sit well with me, obviously. So I went to the Episcopal Church. The Episcopal Church is better, but it still had a closed, and this diocese still has a closed table, meaning that it's open to all baptized Christians. So it's still open to non-Episcopalians, but you have to have at least a level of understanding from baptism onward to be able to receive communion. And not only that, the Diocese of Central Florida, which is one of the most conservative dioceses left in the Episcopal Church, to be a licensed subdeacon and to be single, you had to sign a covenant statement that was sent to the bishop that if you were a single person, you would remain celibate until married to be able to serve the Eucharist with your...
Right. And that leads, of course, to the discussion that, you know, here in our area, in the Central Savannah River area, we have a lot of very conservative churches, and most of them, I mean, we just had St. Mark's downtown, down on Washington Road, left the United Methodist Church to join the Global Methodist Church over whether or not gay people can participate fully in the life of the church, including communion, including, you know, ministering from their altars and things of that nature. And so we have seen whole denominations formed out of this notion of who we should exclude.
Well, the ACNA formed. Right. And, you know, that was right when I was coming up in the Episcopal Church, the Gene Robinson bomb dropped.
Right.
And it's literally what it was called.
Right.
It caused the forming of the ACNA just over because of some bishop in New Hampshire being consecrated a bishop, and caused a debate of, well, we can have gay priests, but God forbid we elevate them to the office of the episcopacy. You know, that
right.
Seems a little counterintuitive. If you're going to open it up to, as far as the priesthood, you should open it up as far as the episcopacy. So,
so something for our audience listening today to reflect on is recall a time when you felt excluded or uncertain at the communion table. How did this experience affect your view of faith and community? So if you'd like to let us know what you think, you can always email us at info@OurSt.Francis.org, and we may feature your comments on a future podcast. Now we're going to turn towards the idea of open table, a practice rooted in radical hospitality of Jesus. You know, there are plenty of churches and denominations worldwide now that have begun opening their tables, or at least moving in that direction, like Father Matt said a moment ago, with the Episcopal Church, USA, you know, they are pretty much open as long as you're a baptized Christian, you know. There are churches like some of the old Catholic churches that take the stance of, we're not going to, you know, put up any kind of roadblock. You know, it's not our job to question your faith or devotion. And so if you feel something sacred is there, whether you're baptized or not, then you're welcome to come and receive. And I think that that is deeply rooted in Scripture. You know, Matthew 25 comes to mind, Bishop Ben, the sheep and the goats. You right. know, and the talking about essentially radical hospitality. You know, did you see me hungry and feed me? Did you see me naked and clothe me? Did you see me homeless and take me in? You know, those types of things, which points to that whole notion of radical hospitality.
Right. And it also points to the same direction of, you know, of everybody. It's the same, no matter if we're clergy or not. Servants in the church, like deacons, volunteers, everybody that's in the church, if we don't smell like the sheep, then how are we going to help people? How, if we're going to exclude people from the communion table, how far are we willing to go to exclude them from coming in the front door? You know, you had to think about how radical was Jesus in his time. He didn't turn anybody away. He didn't hang out with the tax collectors and the righteous. Who did he hang out with? The sinners, us regular people.
And, you know, we have had people in the life of the church who have continued that kind of message, you know. For instance, St. Francis of Assisi, Father Matt, who was so adamant that we needed to be radically hospitable that when he went to get his rule approved, he stayed in a pig pen overnight before meeting the Pope for the second time, trying to get his rule established, and then went back to once again minister to those people who were suffering from leprosy and other diseases. You know, people that were considered outcasts, considered not worthy of coming into the church because they were unclean. He went out into the streets and brought the church to them.
And not only that, but when Claire met Francis and decided to follow the Franciscan path, he included Claire on all the major decisions instead of excluding her. And even empowered her when she founded the Poor Clares to write her own order, instead of having Francis write the order for the women. He looked at Claire and told Claire, you write the order. So we have actually the first monastic rule for women written by a woman that the Pope approved. Now, unfortunately, the Pope has decided that instead of the Poor Clares continuing to minister with the Franciscan friars, they had to be cloistered in a convent, but under obedience, the Poor Clares follow that to this day. But I wish that could be revised, because I think that's not what Francis's original spirit was. But, you know, whether or not, it's still pretty radical for a 14th century friar to come up with, oh, ladies, you want to join? Cool, write your own order and write your own rule, you know? That to me, that's pretty radical, and speaks to how radical we could be in our welcome to people, and how we're still far from that mark in a lot of jurisdictions and denominations to this day. So,
absolutely. And I hear routinely people who come to communion in our church in particular, a lot of people who have been excluded for various reasons, who come to communion mass in our church, who talk about how they actually feel seen for the first time in a long time, and they feel as though, you know, Christ actually was able to come to them and minister to them in some way, after sometimes years of not being able to go to communion. I'm reminded of a woman who, about 10 years ago, I got a phone call from her daughter, and she says, my mom is dying. She's on hospice care, and, you know, we don't know how long she's going to have, and she hasn't been in church in 40 years. And so they called the local Roman Catholic churches, and none of the priests would come out and see her. None of them would bring her communion. None of them would come hear her confession. And so she was like, will you please come, you know, and hear my mother's confession, give her communion. And I said, of course, absolutely. And so I went, and for the next 7 months, you know, I went weekly to visit this woman and to bring her communion, and ultimately was there when she passed away, gave her last rites and before she passed away. And one of the things she said to me one time when I was visiting was she had stopped going to church because the priest had told her, because she had gotten married gotten pregnant out of wedlock, that she was no longer welcome to come to communion. Mm-hmm. And so for 40 years, that stood in her way. That exclusionary act stood in her way from receiving communion. And so when she finally was able to receive again from an open table, it was, I mean, she just cried. She wept when I gave her communion the first time in 40 years. So, I mean, it's a very powerful and very moving thing to be able to, you know, kind of help people find their path back to communion, and all it takes is for us to drop those barriers, which brings us to the next segment on how barriers remain, challenges to openness, you know, and we've talked about the many faith communities that strive for inclusivity, but, you know, there's still those barriers, you know. And so what, we'll start with Bishop Ben. What are some of the remaining obstacles you see to open communion, doctrinally, culturally, or logistically?
Well, I hate to keep going back into the where we come from, the Roman Church, but they're the main character. They're the main oppressors still. They refuse to change their catechism. They refuse to change their doctrine on closing the table with everybody, and closing certain rites and rituals that belong to everybody. You know, it's still, even in, I believe there's an Episcopal church here in Houston that still does that, that has an altar that's closed. I don't remember the name of it, but it's still here. And, you know, you see that on a constant basis, and you also see a lot of churches, like the Baptist church, that they, if you come in looking like a homeless person, they don't want you in their church. They escort you out. It's like one time I did a wedding here in Houston where there was a homeless man and a wife. They're walking by the ceremony site, and they wanted communion, and the bride and groom was trying to run them off because it was ruining their wedding. I stopped the wedding right there. I went and gave them communion because how do we know that's not Jesus in disguise walking by to see if we're going to serve him? We don't know.
You know, Paul makes it clear that some have entertained angels unawares. You know?
Right.
And so I would not want to be on God's mess list.
Right.
Because I turned away.
Somebody that needed it.
Somebody who was there.
When we gave the communion, you should have seen the tears that came out of him and his wife's face.
Right, right.
Because they asked for it, and I was willing to take time out of a ceremony to go and help them.
So, Father Matt, how do issues like race, gender, sexuality, and economic class impact across the table to this day?
So, as you were saying earlier, early on in this country's history, race factored in onto who was allowed in and who wasn't, mainly with the African Methodist Episcopal and those denominations forming because they were excluded from the communion table primarily. Or we saw the advent of primarily Afro-Episcopal churches forming, like the one that we used to meet at, St. Albans, was primarily African-American. So there's still barriers to that. We want to worship with people that only look like us versus practicing that radical welcome of welcoming all. There's still denominations to this day that try to limit LGBTQI clergy and people from participating in the full life of the church and full expression of the church, leading to the forming of the denomination of the Metropolitan Community Churches. And so there's still this history of we want to hold things precious, even though Jesus said, no, this isn't a precious thing. This is something, this is me poured out for all the world and for all the world's salvation. So we need to do a better job of bringing down those barriers so that everybody can participate in the full life of the church.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's still a lot of resistance to change, as we've seen. You know, you pointed out, it's not even been, you know, 40 years since the ACNA was formed over whether or not to have gay clergy in churches. And, of course, they exclude gay people from their altars. The Reform Episcopal Church is a little bit older. It goes back to the 70s. And its big split was over women's participation in the church. And then
in the Anglo-Catholic prayer book.
And the Anglo-Catholic prayer book, right. And then, you know, and then more recently, the split in the United Methodist Church, you know, the global Methodist Church being set up. Because they wanted to be able to exclude people from service and from communion from their tables as well. So, and that's only been in the last 5-6 years. You know, so there's still a lot of resistance in, you know, many churches to opening communion to everyone, to, you know, allowing participation in the full life of the church by everyone. And that makes Jesus weep. As one of my favorite TikTokers says, you know, that makes baby Jesus cry.
You know? Yeah.
And so,
And all denominations have practiced that at some way, shape, or form. Lutherans, you know, you have the ELCA and the LCMS Wells split in the 60s and 70s over women participation. The Presbyterian Church USA versus the Presbyterian Church in America over whether an open table is acceptable and women's ordination. So it's not just, you know, your main players that you think of, like the Baptists the Baptist, American Baptist, Episcopal Church, Catholic Church, all those. It's everybody has been affected by wrestling with the concept of an open table at some point or another.
And so I want to ask our listeners again an opportunity for them to participate. You know, what risks and rewards do you perceive in opening the table wider? And what fears must we confront to live out this message of radical hospitality? Again, you can let us know at info@ourstfrancis.org, or, you know, you can comment on the video or audio wherever you see it. And communion is not simply a ritual, but a moment of grace, transformation, and community. So how do you think, Bishop Ben, that sharing the bread and cup changes us individually and collectively?
Well, that's a very good question. And it changes us physically and spiritually. If it doesn't, then there's something wrong with your heart or your soul. I say, and I use this term from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir piece. It was a very good song. But the thing is, if it doesn't light your wood, it doesn't light your soul on fire, then your wood is wet. So you have to think about the communion that way. And if you just think of it as a grape juice and a cracker, then there's something else also wrong with that situation. You know, like us Catholics, we take it to be the actual blood and body of Christ. Some people just take it as a symbolism. It all boils down to, where do you stand on the communion? What do you believe in? But on the same token, it's supposed to transform us. It's supposed to make us in a better place, a better person. Make us feel that we're closer to Jesus.
I agree, 100%. And Father Matt, being the youngest of the clergy on the panel, you've had plenty of opportunities to reflect, I'm sure, on what it means to be both guest and host at the altar. And so give us your thoughts on that.
So, absolutely. I'm just reflected on this today, actually. I'm approaching my 7th year of ordination. So I've spent a lot of time working behind the scenes as the guest of the altar. And you see quite a bit of people coming forward, presenting themselves, and meaning that you're at the mercy of somebody feeding you versus now you can feed yourself and feed others as an ordained clergy person. So it's like my experiences growing up and what we talked about on this podcast, you know, going through the various splits and the debates over the open table, it really made me think of how do I want to approach my table? And for me, with my table, I'm okay with anyone receiving as long as they understand what they're receiving, right? So as long as they can articulate to me in some way, shape, or form, that is Jesus they're received, I give communion to anybody. And to me, that's the most radical welcome that I think I can offer to people.
I agree.
I mean, here, even in my present denomination, we run, you know, we're permitted to have an open table, but it's at the pastor's discretion. So you have a wide variety of what you can have between churches. So I think for me, my approach is the most radical and the most welcoming and the most Christ-like.
I would agree. Absolutely. And that brings us to looking at some practical guidance for churches, faith leaders, even laity, on how they might embody radical welcome at the communion table. And one of the things that you can do is you can volunteer to be a greeter or server, where you have a little bit of control then over, you know, how people are welcomed and how they are received into the church and how they are served. And for those that, you know, have hospitality teams, or maybe you don't have a hospitality team at your church, implementing one, training them to be radically inclusive, to not turn people away from either communion or from coming to the service, is a very important part of this whole discussion on how to be radically inclusive. Because, you know, you can't, if you don't even let them in the door, they're not going to be able to receive communion, right? So that's where it starts. You know, you have to train them that no one is excluded from, you know, coming to Mass, coming to communion, and receiving. The other part of that is the language that we use. I've been, and I'm sure Bishop Ben, you've seen it too, where clergy, you know, get up to do communion, and the first thing that they say is, if you are a baptized Christian, or if you are a member of our denomination, you are going to receive. But, you know, we should be saying things like, all are welcome. This is Christ's right. table, not ours. What are some other ways that we can kind of be inclusive in our language?
Well, we, you know, like you say, you know, the table's open to all, like when you're doing during the Mass. And like I say, you know, everybody's welcome. Nobody's excluded. You know, we should just make it more very welcoming, make it known in our bulletins, make it in our signs that we're open to everybody. You know, I do want to touch, I know it's off topic, but we had a viewer coming several nights in a row, a viewer from TikTok on yours, coming in and expressing concern because they cannot attend the service because of the service animal. You know, that's one way of excluding somebody from receiving communion. They can't even get inside the church because they have a service animal. To me, that's unacceptable.
Right. And I mean, that is, to me, the bare minimum we can do to welcome people in.
Right.
Is to say, okay, you need this service animal, so we're going to let you and the service animal come to Mass. You know?
Right. To receive. Because they right. can't come in. How are they going to receive?
Exactly. Exactly.
So that means we're not open to everybody.
And Father Matt can testify to the fact that we also do this here at St. Francis. We have creative rituals that honor diversity and inclusion. Things like our LGBTQIA community pride service. You know, speaking of, you know, African-American or African saints and what I consider saints like Martin Luther King Jr. and, you know, Rosa Parks, who fought for inclusion in society, celebrating them the whole month of February, you know, every Sunday being a part of that, even to the point that every Sunday, and people got tired of it every February, we play the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing at Mass, somewhere in the Mass. Every Sunday of February. What are some other
I never get tired of that hymn. I love it.
I just absolutely love it. But what are some other creative ways that we can honor diversity and inclusion in our churches, Father Matt?
Honoring people where they're at. You know, during the month of May, the month of Mary, play Indigenous Latino songs that focus on Marian devotion.
Like Guadalupana that everybody gets mad at using.
Like Guadalupana, yeah. For me, and you don't have to say, this is an open communion table. Nobody knows what the hell that means half the time. So I make a point that after the Behold the Lamb of God at my table, I make a gesture toward the table and I said, all of these gifts are for you, the people of God. The food on this table is food for our journey, not food for those who are worthy. Come and receive Jesus.
And that's excellent.
Everybody gets the hint without having to say this is an open communion table and causing polarity. You're openly inviting everybody that is there in the room to the table. So without having to use insider jargon. So that's just my way around of being openly inclusive, as well as making sure that we're culturally inclusive by honoring other cultures. So
I think that's excellent. That's very excellent. So I want to ask you, listener, how might you extend the radical welcome of communion in your own life? How can you be part of that solution of welcoming people and making sure that they're able to receive from the table in your community? Who in your community needs to hear there is a place for you at this table? You know, maybe it's that person that comes every Sunday and just sits in the corner on the back pew, you know, and doesn't go up to communion, doesn't talk to anybody. They're waiting for someone to say, hey, you're welcome to come forward and receive, you know? And how can we as people of faith make our lives into open tables, spaces of welcome, nourishment, and joy? You know, what can we do on a daily basis to make people feel welcome in our presence and to feel like they can come to us with anything that they need, any issues they may have or anything that they want to discuss? So you're welcome to share your thoughts, info@ourstfrancis.org, or comment wherever you see this podcast, and we will hopefully have a few of those that we can share in the future.
You know, you made an excellent point about how we can improve ourselves. Even for us clergy, here's a good point for us clergy. During the Mass, when we're getting ready to offer the communion to the congregation, make it a point that if we see a congregant sitting in the corner that has never made it to the altar, make it a point to walk back there with the communion and offer it to them. Even if they turn it down, you at least made an effort to make them feel welcome.
That's right. Absolutely.
Walk it back there. Make sure that they have the opportunity to receive it, because maybe they don't feel comfortable walking up to the altar. Make it easier for them to get it.
And there are some resources that are out there that you can check in on, like the book Take This Bread by Sarah Miles. We Make the Road by Walking by Brian McLaurin. There are also some podcasts out there like Radical Welcome, Rethinking Communion. And then there's all kinds of denominational statements from about open communion from the United Methodist Church, the Episcopal Church, the Disciples of Christ, the United Church of Christ, the MCC as well, and the Unitarian Universalists. So, you know, you can always find more information by searching those up as well. In the couple of minutes we have left, your final thoughts, Bishop Benton.
Well, good question. Again, you know, final thoughts, you know, try to make yourself approachable, no matter if you're in the clergy position or laity. Make yourself approachable with people. Show people that you are inclusive. And if you're not, work on your heart. Work on what's making you not inclusive. Try to fix that little flaw, you know. Not everybody's perfect. I know I'm not. So it's just a matter of working on it.
Excellent. Excellent points, Bishop Ben. And Father Matt, your final thoughts.
My final thoughts are that even though it sounds easy to practice an open, loving table, it's really difficult work, because if you're saying that this table is open, then you really have to say the table's open for all. You can't just say we have an open table, but you don't look like you're worthy or in a position to receive. Once you say the table is open, it is open. So just make sure that you are examining your conscience, especially if you're a clergy person looking to open your table, to make sure that you're willing and able to receive all and are ready to receive all at your table.
Those are excellent points, Father Matt, and I so appreciate that. At its heart, communion is both an act of remembrance and a vision of the world as it could be, a table big enough for all, held open by the hands of grace. As you listen to this episode and reflect on its themes, may you find inspiration to expand your faith, your welcome, and your table. Until next week, God bless you all.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.